This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
Hey guys, if you know me, you know I love to travel and you know I love to save money. This episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. From choosing the right travel card to dodging hidden fees, Smart Travel helps your money go further, literally. They cover all things travel finance, like how to plan group trips that don't bust your budget or your friendships. How to maximize points for real savings, not just free bottled water. How to avoid paying for upgrades you won't use, and so much more. They're doing great work over there. Check it out. Travel smarter and spend less with help from NerdWallet. Follow Smart Travel wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome to the Travel Tales Podcast. The winners are the people with the most stories.
One of the great things about traveling is the people that you meet.
I've slept in bus stations, I've slept on people's floors.
And it's already on fire, and then there's just a gigantic, huge explosion, like out of a Hollywood movie.
It's not right or wrong, it's just different.
We hired 10 Chinese prostitutes to come be our audience.
We were kidnapped by nuns in Puerto Rico.
Not a good idea to be high when you're packing. You forget a lot of stuff.
I got swine flu.
By the time you've lived through it, it's just a good story.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Travel Tales Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Siegel. Thanks for listening. My guest today is Melissa Rodway. Before we get to Melissa, here's a few announcements. My website is traveltalespodcast.com. Go there. You'll see stories that I've written, stories that some of the guests have written. You'll see links to our social media. You'll see links to the guests' social media. You'll see photos of the guests. Our social media is Travel Tales Podcast on Instagram. That's where you'll find the bulk of what we post. And I would appreciate it if you follow me there. Travel Tales Podcast on Instagram. We also have a Facebook page. If you're listening to us via streaming, maybe through Apple Podcasts or Spotify or iHeartRadio, wherever you get your podcasts, please give us a good rating. That helps more people find the show by boosting our presence, and that'd be a cool thing for you to do. If you did that, I would appreciate it. We are part of the Voyascape Media Travel Podcast Network. If you go to Voyascape Media, you'll see a lot of travel podcasts, some people doing some great work. And I'm proud to say that yours truly, all of us here at the Travel Tales Podcast, and by that I mean me, along with three other Voyascape shows, were nominated for the best travel podcast at the most recent TBEX, T-B-E-X, travel convention. And though we did not win, it was an honor to be nominated. I was pretty flattered when David, the head of Voyascape, wrote me and said that the show was nominated. It's nice to get some recognition. Apparently there were over 1,000 submissions, and they picked 10 shows, so I was pretty honored. Didn't win, but I'll take it. If you think you'd be right for the show to be a guest, or maybe you know somebody who would be, or if you want to write me and say congratulations and tell me I'm awesome, or maybe have travel questions, whatever, you can write me at traveltalespodcast@gmail.com. That's traveltalespodcast@gmail.com. All right, Melissa Rodway wrote me, and it paid off, because she's our guest today. Melissa wrote a travel memoir, and you know me, I'm a sucker for a travel memoir. It's called The People You Meet. Luxury, leeches, love, and Lao Lao with a host of interesting characters in Southeast Asia. But just remember, The People You Meet by Melissa Rodway. We have a link to the book on Amazon, so you can check it out there. And it's basically a memoir of a trip she took for 4 months in 2010 to Southeast Asia and all the crazy stuff that went wrong. And yes, there are leeches involved. Melissa's from Toronto, Canada, still continues to travel a lot around the world. But a couple years ago, she really knuckled down and tried to organize all these emails that she sent to friends back in 2010 about what was happening on her trip and realized that compiled, these could make a pretty good book. And I have to confess, I haven't read it yet, but I'm going to because I like the sound of it. And the more we talked about it, the more I wanted to read it. So check out The People You Meet on Amazon or wherever you buy your books. And you can also listen to her story from the author herself right here on the Travel Tales Podcast. Here's my chat with Melissa Rodway. Melissa, thank you for doing this. I know you're in Toronto, and now that I saw the schedule, I don't know if you're a sports fan or anything, but this is the worst time to do it because my Cubs are playing right now in the baseball playoffs, and the Toronto Blue Jays are about to start. Boy, we're going to miss some big moments here, but that's okay. You are more important than my Cubs, who are sucking horribly right this week. So.
Yeah,
I'm hoping you're going to do better than the Cubs are doing.
The Jays have been doing really well, but annoyingly, I mean, when they're doing well, it means a commute home that should be half an hour now takes an hour and a half. So, you know, it depends what you think is doing well or not.
Are you close to the stadium?
I used to be. I moved to another part of Toronto like a year ago, but I used to live like a 15-minute walk from there.
Oh, wow. Okay, that is a little crazy. I was in Toronto for the first time 2 summers ago. And it was crazy because I've been to every major city just about in Canada. I've been to like the provinces. I've been to like PEI, for God's sake, more than once, but never to Toronto, the biggest city in the country. And I loved it. I had a great time. Being from Chicago originally myself, it reminded me a lot of Chicago, kind of a cross between Chicago and New York. The only thing that surprised me was how expensive it was.
Yeah, it's awful. They say Toronto crazy. Toronto and Chicago are apparently like sister cities. I've never been to Chicago, but that's what they say. But yeah, it's super expensive.
Melissa, how dare you? Never been. Home state.
One day.
Yeah.
But funny, I was just in PEI like a few days ago. I had never been there at all. And it's so beautiful. I loved it. It's magic. Did you like it?
Oh, it was great. Did you eat the lobster? Of course you did.
Of course, yeah.
So, okay, you reached out to me. It was great because you wrote a book. And did it just come out this year? It looked like it just came out in April, at least on Amazon, it said.
It came out in April. Have you had a chance to read it yet?
I have not read it yet. No, but I will because it's my kind of thing. I've interviewed a number of people who've done memoirs here, and I've kept journals in a lot of my early travels, and I've slacked off on that over the years. But if you describe to people what it's about, this is basically your travels in 2010. You took off for how long?
Not too long. I mean, it was a 4-month trip, but long enough for me to write lots of stories. So basically, this was a journey I took with a partner at the time. And they happened to work in luxury travel. So they were researching some routes for, you know, potential clients down the road. So part of the trip was luxury, I would say 80% backpacking, 20% luxury. So I was basically just along for the ride, and we went through Thailand, Laos, Cambodia, Vietnam, and China. So it was really like two polar experiences. You'd be like, you know, slugging it out in hostels or $1 guest houses or whatever. And then 3 nights later, you'd be staying in a hotel where like Angelina Jolie probably just left like an hour before you got there. So, you know, and you'd show up to those hotels looking disgusting, like in your hiking boots and you're sweaty and gross. And then you show up to the front desk looking like that, but they always handled it quite well. So basically it was that. And while I was there, my partner had, you know, had more of a purpose to like check out hotels, and, you know, he had an idea of what he wanted to do and see. And for me, I love traveling. I love adventure, but I get restless if I don't have like a purpose. So after a while, I started getting a little bit cagey. And I know a lot of people will be like, think that you're crazy to say that, but that's how it goes. It's like not all like, you know, buttercups and lollipops. It's not easy. So, so we'd be on like trains and buses and whatever for like, you know, long journeys. And I just started crafting these emails in my head of like what we were doing. And I started sending them out to my friends and family, and they were good. They were funny, and people started sending them all over the place. And so I guess I thought, you know, down the road, I'll turn this into a book. And it's taken me 15 years because, I was in and out of it. Like sometimes I'm like, I'm going to do this. Then I was like, forget it. And then 2 years ago, I'm like, I'm just going to go for it. But you know what? Thank God I waited, because the things that we could say in 2010, you cannot say now. So I would have been like canceled immediately. So
you
had to
do it a little bit.
Oh, big time. You have to nowadays. And then it also like gives you a chance to, you know, reflect a little bit. Like I have a very good memory. So even though it was 15 years ago, it feels like yesterday, but you know, with a little distance, you know, you can, sometimes you need a little time to tell your story. So say what it.
We should say the name of it. It's called The People You Meet, which is the name of it.
People You Meet. Yeah.
And then it has a long subtitle. It's a luxury leeches, love, and is it Lao Lao?
Yep.
Lao Lao with a host of interesting characters in Southeast Asia. Okay, that's 4 months. Are you still with this partner?
Oh, I'm not going to tell you because then
is that part of
you
the
have
book?
To read the
okay,
book.
Good.
It's a all very right. Well, honest mystery. Story, right? Like, okay. I don't really hold back on anything.
Well, leeches seem to come up a lot in terms of the comments and in the title, actually. So you want to get to the leech story? Can you tell us that or a little bit of it? Tease it for us? Sure.
Yeah. So we had gone up to northern Laos, and I'm a pretty active person. So, you know, like there was a lot of drinking. Like I was 35 at the time, so I'm Canadian. We drank a lot.
That's what you do. Sure.
Totally. But, you know, I was a super active person, still am, and I wanted to get a sort of like an active trip in at some point. So we went up to northern Laos and decided to do this jungle trek. And it was kind of an off season maybe at that time. I don't know if you can even say that about Laos. Probably the whole year is off season for Laos in 2010. But anyways, we signed up for this with this company, and even like signing up for it, there was like a hint of like tragedy already in the sign up process. And they just said to us, oh, you know, there's going to be a few bees and, you know, and we'd had like several beers at that point. And we're like, whatever, that's fine. Here's our signature. Take our money, whatever. The night before, my partner did not sleep. He's pretty intuitive. And he's like, we're in trouble. So basically, yeah, this was like a 3 or 4 day jungle hike into northern Laos. And the first 2 days there were bees like everywhere circling our tents. This like, it was like being in a Stephen King novel.
Oh, no.
And then if that wasn't bad enough, then all of a sudden there were leeches like everywhere, like crawling up your legs, crawling, like we would be hiking and I was very vigilant. So I maybe had like a couple, but the guy in front of me had like shorts on and tennis shoes and his legs were just like, there was just blood everywhere. He had like probably 10 leeches, five per leg. And yeah, like that was just like days and days like that. And then at night, like we were sleeping in this, like an open hut and there'd be leeches there. There were like holes in the floor, like it was just disgusting. One guy ended up getting a leech like right up his bum, actually.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh no.
And yeah, like we were resting. I don't know if you can call it resting because like it was trauma, really 3 or 4 days of trauma, like leeches, bees, like nonstop. And he like laid down. And all of a sudden there was like he's just covered in blood, like all over his bum, all over his legs.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And then the only thing you can do is like jump into a creek and that's full of leeches. And like, it was brutal, I have to tell you, but
it was awful.
And there was nothing good about it. Like it was hot. There was nothing beautiful to look at. There was no scenery. The people like leading it were really scary. Like, just kind of like looking at you like, what are you people doing here? And
so, and it was awful. And in 2010, it wasn't so easy to like go to TripAdvisor and see reviews on a place or something, or a tour company or something.
Which is part of the beauty of that time, right? Like, we still weren't really even using the internet. Like, I was going to internet cafes. We didn't have phones.
Yeah. I remember.
So you just did what you did.
You survived.
Fun to talk about it. Yeah, come on.
That's
like,
amazing.
Whatever.
So that was 3-4 days of that?
Yeah. Yeah. It's worth reading about that one. Yeah.
So before you left on this 4-month journey, what was your travel experience before that? Were you like a hard seasoned, like, I've been backpacking the Andes for years or something? Were you just kind of like local trips and stuff like
that? Yeah, like always, you know, I had traveled in high school, like when I was 19. Basically, my dad, like we left home at 18, 19. And I'd done my like stint in Europe, backpacking and whatever. And then, yeah, so a few months maybe here and there in my life. And then after that, I was always working. So maybe 3 weeks here, but always like adventure, backpacking. You know, it was never like, I was not a resort person or anything like that. And so what was also interesting about that was I had no idea like when the end of my trip would be. He traveled much longer than I did. But a thing for me that was interesting about this is like knowing when you've had enough. So at 4 months, I'm like, I'm done. I loved it, but I am not, you know, I wasn't like enjoying it anymore. And it was becoming a job and I was really tired. And I think that there's a lot of ego around travel sometimes where you're like, I'm going to go out for a year. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And at some point, sometimes you're like, I absolutely hate this and I'm done. And like, it's a hard thing to admit sometimes, but you have to know when the party is over. And for me, after 4 months, the party was over.
What was the original plan? Were you thinking like you kept it open-ended and say, hey, if this is a year, I'm going a year. I mean, were you in between? I don't know what your job was, or were you in between gigs, or you just had?
No, I totally quit my job, but I had gone to a psychic and she said, you're going to go away. It probably won't be for a year, but you will know when it's over. And I'm like, okay. But in my head, like being egomaniacal, I was like, oh, I'll go for like 9 months, a year. Like, what does she know? But sure enough, I was like, cause it was exhausting. We were like on the road every 2 days. You know, it was, there was no, you know, this like slow travel people talk about. No, that did not exist in that time. And I was not built like that, nor was my partner. We were like, let's do it all, see it all, like kill ourselves.
That's the hard thing. You don't realize you're caught between this thing. I think when you're younger, let's go see this. And now the older I get, the slower it gets. But also, like I just did a run of cruises, you know, like 3 weeks of cruises working, doing stand up in Alaska.
Cool.
But it was like it was 6 different contracts. And every 3-4 days, I was going to a different one. And people think, oh, you're just on a cruise ship. But it's like, it's the every 3 days of packing, unpacking, getting to the shuttle, getting through the airport, getting to that. It's the logistics. It's not the actual, you know, being where you're at. It was the tiring part. It's the getting there. And where's my passport? Where's my ID? Where's my thing? Who's getting us to the airport? Can we make it on time? And then when you're, and I wasn't even making my own plans, you know, in traveling around. Like you were doing like 4 months, I tell people that's the hardest thing is the logistics. It's like, you finally get to a place and now we got to figure out, okay, where's the next place? And do we have a place to stay? We got to book it. We got to find out where that gets tiring.
That's awful.
That wears you out.
Yeah. To be honest, like I actually do a lot of group travel now. That's like 10 to 15 people. And it's always adventure travel. Like I actually now prefer hiking trips and cycling trips and whatever. I'd rather, that's how I want to move by my own steam. But I hate planning trips. I hate it.
Yeah.
I love being on the trip, but it's like, and what you're saying is true. Like when you're traveling, and sometimes I'll do both. I took a year off 2 years ago and it was a mix of like solo travel and group travel and whatever. But when you're on your own, it's just like, oh my God, I just got here. And where's the bus? I need my ticket to get out of here. Like, it's just like, shoot me now. What am I doing?
Wait, so you took a whole year?
2 years ago, I did. In 2023, I took a year off.
Wow.
I know. And I treated that one differently because I had learned my lesson, I think, from Southeast Asia going, I get travel fatigue. So this one, I probably cost me way more money, but I would go away for like 5 to 8 weeks and come home and regroup for a couple weeks and like get my acting gear. And then I would go out again. And that was awesome. I mean, in hindsight, you're always like in hindsight, I would have even done that differently. But at the time that made sense to me.
Where was those? Was those overseas or were those mostly domestic or were you...
Well, the point of this one, I was like 48 when I did that one. So I wanted to do as much active travel as I could to get like some things off my bucket list because you just never know. The old bod starts to give up a little bit.
Yeah, I'm starting to stare that in the face right now.
Yeah, it sucks. So I was like, it was more about these are the things I want to do. So I actually spent some time in Quebec City in Canada in the winter because I love winter. So I just like skied and snowshoed and skated and like
fun.
I had no friends and I loved it. I like was outside all day in the snow and then I would come home and have a bath and read a book and watch Netflix and that was it. And it was like, of all the things I've done in my life, that's like,
what? That was great.
You know, like, that was like, oh my
what
God.
What a cool city too. I was there. Oh. I stopped in there on a ship. I did the Montreal to Boston run a couple of times.
Yeah.
And we stopped in Quebec City each time. And man, what a cool, if you think you're in Europe, you know, just looking around. I mean, it looks like it.
Yeah. It's amazing.
But, yeah. It seemed like really cool.
Yeah. So I was there and then I was in like Chile, Argentina, Bolivia. And then I was in Europe, like Croatia and Italy. Well, I actually hurt myself in Italy. I was supposed to hike in the Dolomites, but I had one too many gelatos and I fell in a gelato shop trying to put my cup in the garbage. And that was the end of that. So yeah, but I was in Montenegro and Slovenia and like all that fun stuff in Italy and Turkey. And then I was in Mexico and yeah, like just different places. It was awesome. Yeah.
That's great. I have not been to Montenegro or Slovenia.
Oh yeah. So yeah.
I've been to Croatia like 5 times, but I haven't been.
Isn't it awesome?
Yeah. Yeah. Were you skiing there as well? Did you do skiing there?
No, I cycled. I was on a cycling trip in Croatia. I can tell you a really gross story there if you want to hear it.
Yeah, we love those. Sure.
Okay. So yeah, I was on a tour. It was with a company. I won't say the name. They're a great company, but we'll just not do that. So yeah, I was on a cycling trip and it was one of those things where you're with like 10, 13 people and almost everyone like gels like instantly. Like you're almost, it's like, oh my God, where have you been all my life? Like that's the fun thing about traveling, right? It's like you meet these kindred spirits right off the bat. You don't have to explain yourself. They get you. Anyways, super fun. And my roommate was 65, but she was this woman from England and super fit, like super young at heart. We got along like a house on fire. And then one night we went out, all of us, to this like family restaurant in the countryside. And they gave us, what is that? I forget the name of it. What's that moonshine they have there? Or like the
Rieka, like whatever it is.
Oh my God. They gave us tons of it. And then they said, You now also have infinite bottles of wine at dinner. Well, holy shit.
Yeah, that's the green light.
So we were having way too much fun. And then we went back into the village we were staying in. She went to bed and I went out. And then I got back to my room. And like, you know, when you open the door and you're like, something's wrong, but I don't know what it is yet. Well, what had happened is this woman had thrown up all over the whole room and like throw up like you've never seen before, like down the walls.
Oh, no.
Like the, door handles, all the whole bathroom, bed, my backpack, my stuff. Yeah.
Oh.
And so basically like, yeah, it was so disgusting. And then I was worried like, well, she might die in the night. Like, what do you do? Like, she's like totally lying on the bed, passed out, snoring her brains out, but barf everywhere. It was so gross. And then I had to sleep somewhere else. And then in the morning, somehow I got my stuff out of there and then we had to cycle. And I'm like, oh my God, she's going to be dead. Like, how will she do it? She was totally fine. Like, cleaned herself up, got on the bike, away she went. I'm like, most people would be dead. And I just, my stuff just smelled like barf. So I had to get on a ferry, I had to ride my bike and then get to the next town. And then I went right to the laundromat and like, and I know this is a really disgusting story for people.
Oh, we've had
but
worse.
These but things happen, right?
Like a true Brit. She was just on that bike the next day. It's like nothing. It's like a normal Tuesday night.
Yeah. But I'm still a little traumatized. And I'm like single room after that.
Yeah. Any injuries on that 4-month trip you took about in the book?
No, you know what? We were super lucky. Like, only sick maybe once, not really. And I'm not very smart. Like, I will drink, I will brush my teeth under any tap water. I don't care. And I was very lucky. I have to say, very, very lucky. And there you're like eating, you know, have you been to Thailand?
Oh, yeah, many times.
Yeah. So like you see how they're washing the dishes on the street.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just like anything goes. But no, I didn't. Did you get, have you been super sick when you've been away?
Yeah. India took me out. It's a very common place where people get sick, but yeah. And I got a pretty good stomach and I've eaten street food all over the world, but 2 weeks in India finally caught up to me and I, it was a bad night, like your roommate in Croatia. Yes. Or whatever. It was really bad.
But it's disgusting.
That was the worst. And then a sketchy night of stomach in Peru once, and Mexico can always catch up with you. You never know. But otherwise, knock on wood, I've been pretty lucky. But I
got super sick in Mexico too. Actually, like 2 years ago, it was awful. Really? Yeah, like, so I was so sick that I had to get out of my Airbnb and then check myself into a really gross hotel. And then I had to take a bus I can't remember the town right now, but it was like one of these buses where it's like serpentine roads. Yeah. And I thought I was going to die. At one point, I almost went up to the driver and I was like, just leave me on the side of the road. I don't care anymore.
Just leave me to die.
I would rather do that.
When you look back on these, you know, because during COVID, I went through a lot of old journals and stuff. I really kind of dug into old photos and old bins that I hadn't opened for a while. And reading some of the things that I don't journal anymore, and I feel like I should. But and I'm kind of glad I found these things. But it's interesting to think I've seen a lot more in the last 20 years than I have. You know, than I did before that previous 20 years. So I'm not really the same person. Did you look at these journals and say, boy, I am that person, but I'm not that person anymore?
Yeah, that's interesting because when I was editing it, I'm 15 years older now. So I wanted to remain true to who I was at 35 because that's what the story is. And some things I'm like, yeah, nothing's changed. And other things I'm like, oh, this is embarrassing, but I have to be true. I'm going to be true to that person at 35. So yeah, for sure. But I don't know. I mean, I don't think I've changed a ton, to be honest. I think I just drink a lot less.
Yeah.
And I, you know, that's not the focus anymore. I mean, not that it truly was before, but I just can't do it.
It was more of a focus back then. No, none of us can.
Yeah,
so were you, did you look at it and say, I'm going to write this, just print the emails as is, or I'm going to write this as a present day person looking back and describing what's happening, or how did you make the story play out?
Yeah, it's totally like when you read it, Mike, you will feel like you are doing it with me. It's not like me 15 years later. It's like you're in the moment. It's very, because when I wrote the emails, it was very like, this is exactly what's happening. And I left it like that. Which is fun. People love that because I think the beauty of this book is that even if you're not a traveler, I've had many people read this book who are like not adventurous at all. And that's what they loved about it. They're like, oh my God, I just went on the most amazing journey with you. And I felt like I was right there with you. And that's pretty cool, right? Like sometimes I say, yeah, I did it for you. You don't have to go. You don't have to get on that 36-hour plane ride.
Or do the leeches. Have you been back to Southeast Asia since?
No, and I don't really care to. It's funny because, yeah, like some people love that part of the world. I like it. I don't love it. I think it's really beautiful and it's cheap and there's lots to explore. But it's not a place where I feel instantly like it's my place. Like, I interviewed someone on my show once about this once. He believed in past lives. And it was a fascinating conversation about why when you travel, sometimes the second you land in an airport, you're like, I'm home. I belong here. I don't know why, but this is where I need to be. And for me, I feel like that in like Latin America or some parts of Europe, certainly Canada, because I'm from here. But Southeast Asia, I never for one second was like, this is very natural for me. And this is my, this is the second home. Not at all.
And so you've also,
I loved it, but yeah.
Yeah, you've also said that you like winter, so that ain't going to help you in Southeast Asia, you know, no, jungle climate.
Yeah, it was so hot. Like China July is like, no, thank you.
And Thailand, all of it, you know, I mean, I remember being, and I don't do well. I think California has ruined me actually for 20 years of with humidity. Even coming to Florida here where I'm doing this is... It hits you in the face, man. Like I don't do well in humid. And then I always forget, like a friend of mine just moved to Costa Rica. And when I was in Costa Rica, it's beautiful. Yes, it's great. But it's hot, man. And I don't know, 24/7, 365 of that. I don't know if I could do it. I just melt. I remember in Bali, I just could not cool down. Even in like, I would turn the AC on full blast when I got to the hotel, and I just like I still couldn't, like I was hot all the time.
Yeah, I mean,
it's tough. It drains you.
And then like people are like, it's funny, right? When like you talk to travelers, because you do have the right to complain, but if you tell people that never do this stuff, they're like, shut up.
Oh
like,
yeah, you're a
poor baby.
Well, it's one of the reasons I did this show is because, you know, I wanted to be able to talk to people who were, you know, who like talking about this stuff. And then I, you know, people ask me why I don't talk about traveling more on stage, because you toe that line of people like, A, they don't know what you're talking about because, you know, they don't get the references because they haven't been to where you've been. Or B, they'd be like, oh, listen to this guy, you know, oh, Mr. Traveler, just, you know, bragging, like I'm bragging or something. So you're not going to get a laugh from that if they, you know, resent you. So it's like kind of a no win, really. Yeah. So I wanted to have like a safe space where I could talk about this stuff and not feel like I'm being judged. You know what I mean?
Totally. There, and like, even amongst travelers, there's such travel judgment and I hate it. Like it was sometimes when you say to people, oh, I go on like organized group trips, they look at you with disgust, right? It's like, dude, I'm not on a bus with 50 people. I'm with 10 in a van, like going to like rural anywhere. Right. But yeah, there can be a real travel judgment. I'm just like, as long as you're doing it and you like it and you're out there, who cares how you're doing it? Just go for it.
And I notice, even though I take solo trips now, a lot of them tend to be, and I'm, you know, was very an independent traveler and I traveled a lot by myself. But as I get older, a lot of them focus on, I'm meeting friends somewhere down the, like, you know, totally. I'm going to be nearby by myself for like, you know, a week or so, but then I'll come meet you. I'll swing through London and then I'll hang and see with my friend. I do like that social animal because I'm not staying in hostels anymore. And it is hard to meet people. It is hard to connect. And so I have taken some adventure trips myself. And I remember my first trip to Croatia was an adventure tour. And India was a tour group. I went solo and was in a group of like 12. And also in a country where it helps to have a guide, a local speaking guide, you know. If I was ever going to travel through, say, like China, I'd want a local guy who spoke Chinese, man. I mean, it's a hard, I can rough it to a point. I mean, I'd survive, but it's a hell of a lot easier having someone who knows the local ins and outs and can speak, you know, and read the stuff, you know, help you.
We were in China for a month and it almost killed me. Like it was so hard.
I haven't been to mainland China. I've been to Hong Kong and Taiwan, but not mainland China.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So we were in China, like, some cities, but also some very extremely rural areas, and it's tough slugging. Yep.
Yeah.
And that was
is that in the book? That's in the book.
Yeah.
Oh, great! All right.
Yeah.
And this is like, China from 15 years ago, which is not the same China now.
Yeah,
for sure.
So we stayed one night in a Tulu, which is like a roundhouse that's like in the. If you look this up, you'll read about it too. But these are like 800 They fit 800 people in them, and they started in the 15th century, and they're like a, it's like just a big round house with like room upon room upon room stacked, and they're rickety and old and freezing, and they're still like, it's a Hakka Chinese community that lives there. So we stayed in one of those for a night.
Wow.
Terrifying. But worth a story. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. You didn't get sick in China. Because that's a common place too.
People, I hated sick. The food in China. Like, it actually brought tears to my eyes. And and I started out liking it. I thought, oh, it's really good. And that did not last. And no offense. But it was so bad. And this is in the book too. Like, that one night we pretty much sprinted to a Pizza Hut that was, and I never do that ever. But I'm like, just get me there now. Yeah.
Some days you see those golden arches, baby. And you're like, oh boy, okay, I gotta bite the bullet on this one. The
sometimes
did, yeah. Okay, of all of your travels, the craziest thing you've ever eaten? Like, what have you done? The insects? Have you done the?
Yeah, any of those things? I don't mind the insects; they don't bother me. Like, usually you just chase them with whatever, or they're crunchy. But you know what's really like gross is. I remember being in Vietnam. We were, have you been to Vietnam on like the water market stuff? Mm-hmm. So, well, two things. One, I don't like durian, that gross.
Oh, the sticky fruit.
It's it's so disgusting. So I don't like that. I also don't like that fruit that tastes like barf. I forget what it is, but I don't like that. But it's more like when you don't know what kind of meat you're eating that I find challenging. So I remember this like one boat pulled up to us at the water market and we were hungry and bought some sort of sandwich. And it's like, oh, I don't know like what I'm eating. Like dog, I don't know. Like that.
Yeah.
Like,
oh boy.
It's that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah. It could be rat. And in China, it could be, you know, whatever kind of rodent or something, you know?
Yeah.
I did have the guinea pig. Yeah.
Yes.
Did you have that? The guinea pig in Peru?
Yes.
Yeah.
I didn't like it. Yeah, it's gross.
It's kind of like rabbit, but it's a lot of little bones. It's like a lot of work for not a huge payoff. You know, there's not a lot of meat there.
Yeah. And like, was the head still on yours and the claws and everything?
No.
Yeah. We had the, like, it was like a bat. Looked like a bat. Like, yeah.
Ooh, yeah.
Head, claws, all of it. Gross.
How about like... How about like travel logistical things that any horrifying plane flights or tuk-tuk rides or bus rides or something?
Well, I mean, all that stuff, like I'm sure in India, you know, too, like it's scary, right? The roads, the traffic, the headlights constantly coming at you. My partner and I in this story have done some stupid things. So jumping in the back of a car with some strange person. Like, it's just, I think it's funny how your level of safety and trust is not like it is at home. I would never do that in Toronto for sure. But when you go away, you're like, sure, this strange man wants to drive me somewhere. Yeah, of course, sure, I'm going to go with him. Yeah. So it's more things like that. Like, one, we did have a thing in China. This is in the book. But we arrived at this city, Kunming, at like midnight or something. And, you know, when you get to a new city, it's always disorienting. And it was dark and we couldn't see any taxis or anything like that. There was no Uber, did not exist. Maybe it still doesn't in China. Who knows?
Right.
So this guy came at us and he was like, I'm a celebrity and I'll take you where you need to go. There's no taxis. So like, you don't have any options. And we're the only
I'm a celebrity.
Westerners.
I'll get you out of here.
Yep. So we're like, oh my God. Okay. So then he gets us into this car with this other man. We go around the corner, then we see all the taxis and we're like, how stupid are we? Like, all we had to do is walk around the corner and there are taxis everywhere. They lock the door, they peel out of there, and then the driver hits the brakes and the celebrity looks at us and he goes, give me something to remember you by. And I'm like, oh my God, he's going to kill us. Like, who says that?
That's creepy.
So it was awful. And then they started screaming. And then he jumped out of the car and we were like, oh my God, they're going to take us to some industrial garage and chop us up into pieces and kill us.
Oh, no. God.
That was scary. And then it was fine. The guy dropped us off at our hostel, but I was like, literally like, this is it.
Oh,
I mean, it's more things like that. Like it's always scary. The driving, I many nights in Vietnam, I'm like, we're going to die, but it's just sometimes like you wonder if you've trusted the wrong person, right? To drive you around.
Right. Well, you seem to take these long. Oh, I've been in like some. Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah. I've jumped into cars where I've hitchhiked. I would never do that in the States.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I was never.
No. I know.
I met a guy in Finland, a friend of a friend, a guy I'd known him for less than 24 hours. And we get hammered in Helsinki one night. And he says, hey, tomorrow we can go to my family house. We have a cabin and we'll have a sauna. And, and
of course.
I'm like, okay, I'm by myself. Yeah. I don't even know this guy. He comes, picks me up. He takes me 2 hours outside into the woods, into this cabin where he starts a fire in this like homemade sauna, this little log cabin sauna. And we just like sit naked in this. Now, and it turned out to be a great day. But, you know, I would never do that in the States. If some stranger came up to me in a bar, I'm in Cleveland, and is like, hey, you want to go to the woods tomorrow and get naked in a sauna? I'd be like calling the cops. They're like, hey, this is no. But in Finland, sure. Why not? Sure.
I think
I'm
that's
in.
Part of the fun, though, right? Like,
it's great.
It's like letting your guard down and you have to trust people. And as they say, 90% of people are always good. It's, you know, the 10%.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's part of the fun.
And we forget that, you know, many, many countries around the world are safer than here. I mean, not as much Canada,
oh my God.
But I can say that in America for sure.
Well, yeah, maybe these days. but, you know, I was in Colombia in December and a lot of people
where?
Still have, like Medellin and Bogota and then coffee regions. And then I did another jungle hike because I didn't learn the first time, but people still have a real like fixation on Colombia that it's the way that it used to be.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, oh my God, it's so dangerous. I felt safer there than I do in Toronto. Toronto is like not so great these days in many ways. It's like, there's a lot of problems here. Maybe it's not like the States, but for us it's very different.
No.
And I felt safer in the subways. I felt safer on the street.
Oh, yeah.
They're way more ahead of us in so many ways than we are here.
Medellin, I thought was great. I went there.
Yeah.
I was only in Medellin and Cartagena. I hadn't been to Bogota yet, but Medellin, it's funny. It's just like we want to move away from the 80s, you know, drug cartel Pablo Escobar thing. But then you go by the tourist stands and there's like Pablo Escobar towels and posters and like trinkets. It's like you do, but you don't, you know? And it's kind of like reminds me of Chicago when they still have, you know, Al Capone stuff. It's like, you know, we're going to distance ourselves from it, but we're still going to embrace it. It's still part of our, I don't know.
It depends who you talk to. Like, I met a few locals and they were like, well, we will tell you whatever you want to know, because a lot of them are like, especially the people in their 30s and 40s have lived it and lost family.
Oh, yeah.
And the stories are fascinating. But I had a few of them say, we'll tell you anything you want to know, but do not glorify what happened here. And like, don't think that Narcos is, you know, like it's not really like that. And I thought that was really wise. It's horrible stuff. And people do like romanticize it a little bit, but it's pretty awful. So,
yeah.
But what a magical place.
Do any of these countries you go to and you've been to a lot and you do some extended travel? I mean, is the plan, do you have a plan to eventually maybe live overseas permanently and be an expat somewhere or?
That's a funny question, because every time I go anywhere, and this is what I say to everybody, I want to live there. And they're like, Melissa, every time you go anywhere, you want to live there. Like, I was just in Italy. They're like, oh, you just wanted to live in Italy like 3 months ago. Now you've just come home from PEI and you want to live in PEI. So maybe I just don't want to live in Toronto anymore. I don't know. Yes, certainly one day I would love to, but I just haven't figured that part out. I'm still like a little bit chained to the old 9-to-5 golden handcuffs. So that's the problem.
Well, what is your 9-to-5? Because it sounds pretty flexible, these trips you take. I mean, what are you doing? What are these handcuffs? Because they seem pretty loose, these handcuffs.
I know, that's the problem. I work at the university in Toronto, and there's some perks for sure. But
oh, so you have summers off?
No, but oh. I have good vacation. Yeah, no, not my program. I do not. But I know what I'm doing.
Okay. Do you teach or are you an educator?
No. I am basically like a program manager for a healthcare program, but I'm not a healthcare person. I'm just very good at telling people what to do and operations. Okay.
That's
so,
cool.
Yeah. But you know, that just pays the bills, but yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Now tell me about, Tell me about the podcast and when did that start and are you still doing it or do you have plans to continue it? Yeah. What's going on there?
The podcast started, I think, in 2013, maybe something like that. That sounds about right. 2013, 2015. I don't know. Something. It was like 5 or 6, 7 years I did it. It was amazing. I loved it. And I was interviewing similar to you, like people that were doing adventure travel. Like one of my guests had walked across Africa for 2.5 years, and someone else had like cycled home from China to Canada for 2.5 years. Like it was, people were like, oh, you're talking about your trips. I'm like, my trips are nothing. Like, like these are people that are doing hardcore stuff. So it was mainly about things like that. And I absolutely loved it. And I loved the research and meeting the people, but it's a lot of work, as you know.
Yes.
So I had to sort of let it go for a little bit to write the book and to do some travel, but I would like to get back to it. But it's funny because when I, like, it was a radio show and then it sort of trickled into a podcast and now everybody has a podcast.
Yeah.
But back then it was like still, there weren't a ton.
What was the name of it?
Fly Travel Radio.
Fly Travel Radio. And and I, this other thing in your bio that totally frightened me, that you dipped your toe into stand-up comedy. As a professional, I have to know what, where and when and how this went.
Well, I took a course actually in Toronto, and it was funny. It was like... I don't know what it was called. I can't remember now. But when I walked in, it was like full of Latinos. So I'm like, what stand-up comedy course have I signed up for here? It was so much fun. Yeah, like I was think the only Canadian or one of two. But anyway, well, that's Toronto, right? Like that's actually that's a very realistic story in Toronto, because Toronto is full of different populations. So it was actually really, really fun. There was like a girl from Nepal there and several people from Latin America and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so they basically taught us like over 2 months how to come up with the premises? I can't remember the word, but and like pitch your stories and then how to write and how to like call things down and how to do like callbacks and all of that. And then at the end, we had to go and do like a 10-minute
performance. Showcase somewhere?
Yeah. It was fun. I loved it. So I would do that again, but it's funny. I mean, you know, you do it, but people will be like, well, why don't you just go do it again? And it's like, because you don't, for me, like, it's a lot of work. You have to like write and figure out the story. You don't like, a lot of people are like, oh, don't you just get up there and do it? I'm like,
yeah,
no. Well, I can't.
Right. Yeah, it does take a little effort and preparation.
Oh, my God.
You notice the people who don't prepare, and it's brutal to sit through. Trust me.
Oh, it's awful. Yeah. How long have you been doing it?
35 years.
Okay, wow.
So, you know, which is weird because I'm only 29.
I know. So, how did that happen?
Isn't that crazy? That's nuts.
Yeah.
So what's your next trip? Do you have another one planned? How about another book? You got another book plan?
I do. I mean, I have lots of stories, but I'm trying to still sell this one. And that's like as much work as writing it. So I mean, I would like to do everything. It's my day job. It gets in the way, you know, like I would love to do stand up again. I would love to write another book. I'd love to bring back my podcast, but I will see what presents itself. But you know what, for trips, I don't really know. Like trip, I find that a place will dictate to me where I'm supposed to go. Like all of a sudden something will get into my head and I'm like, that's where I have to go. I mean, I have certain things I want to do in my life and see and whatever, but I do feel like all of a sudden something will come to me and I just know that's where I need to be. But Canada's pretty cool. I think next summer, like, I do love the East Coast and I would like to see some stuff around there, but who knows?
What's on your like physical bucket list? Is it like climbing a certain mountain or you want to, you know, bicycle across a certain thing? Yeah. Or do you have one of those?
I did a lot of that stuff in 2 years ago, but that's for that, as you know, like your list becomes three times the size every time you go out. I was hoping to do Kilimanjaro, but I don't know. I'm starting to think I don't need to do that because every person I talk to lately gets really ill. And
You could do it. It was great. It was hard, yeah. But I mean, it was great. I mean, and it's doable in a week. You know, that's the good thing. It's like I was going to try to do Everest Base Camp this past year, like this week, these next few weeks. And my plans got jettisoned for reasons I won't go into, but it's one of those physical things I've always wanted to do. And I feel my window closing on that. Quickly. That's like 2 weeks on the mountain alone. And then it's like another 2 days to get there. So you really got to block off about 3 weeks. Kilimanjaro's it's doable and it's not a technical hike. It's just, it's a trail basically. The big thing is the altitude. And so that hits everybody different. You know, totally. I mean, a young, healthy guy could be wiped out and like you know, 65-year-old woman be fine. You know, you just don't know. So I got a little altitude sickness, I think, but not too bad. But I was on the shortest route, which was only 5 days. And many will say that's too quick because we never took an acclimatization day where you like stay at one and you go up and come back and like give your body time. We just kind of plowed straight through. I was in a group of 12 and 11 of us peaked, but one guy didn't make it. He was young. He was like in his mid-30s and in shape, and it took him out, man. Altitude's a crazy thing. Did you feel it in like Bogota and in Medellin? Did you feel mountains?
I felt it. I think the most I've ever felt it was in Peru and Ecuador.
In Cusco and stuff.
Yeah. But like debilitating, and that does not look fun at all.
Yeah, so. I found like 15,000 was the number. Over 15,000 feet, I really started to feel it. You know, up until then, it was like being on a really high ski mountain to me. You know, it's just like the normal kind of shortness of breath. You're a little trouble sleeping, you know, that kind of thing. But never like 15, that's when I started feeling the little nauseous and headache and that kind of stuff. So slow. That's the whole big thing.
Yeah.
The slower you go, the better, but you could do it. You could do it. And plus you can tie in a safari with it and you know, that kind of stuff, which is great.
Yeah. I've not done that yet. I did like one in Nepal, but I have not been to Africa. I really need to.
Oh gosh. Yeah. You have to.
I know.
As an adventure person. Yeah. That'd be great. Yeah. You could do it. So, this is where you can get your plugs in. Where can people follow you on like social media? And I will have a link to the Amazon, the link to the book. But where else can people follow you? Are you on Instagram? Yeah.
Instagram is the best, and it's fly_travel_media. But if you just put fly travel media, it will come up. That's where I post most things. So I think that's the best place to reach me. But and then Amazon for the book. And I don't know, do you have any like Canadian listeners or where
do you live? Of course we do. Okay. This is worldwide. We got, come this on.
Is worldwide. Of course it is.
Yeah, yes. If they speak Amazon. English, I don't know how many Quebecois we have, but, oh, you cool. know.
Yeah, Amazon is the best. And then in Canada, it's at like certain bookstores in like Toronto, Book City and Indigo and places like that. So, but Amazon is good.
Have you done a live reading? Did you ever do one of those?
No, but that's coming next. I've been sort of traveling around all summer doing like book festivals and signings and things like that. And that's coming to a close. And then, but it's like the stand-up thing, right? It's like I have to kind of put together a little package. I don't want to wing it. So that's the next phase here.
What have you learned about writing a book, and what can you tell others to, any advice for people who want to write a book?
Oh my God. It's a bittersweet process. One is that you have to be very dedicated. Like for me, I self-published, so I had to be like firm with myself to like just sit there and do it. So that's hard, but I love writing. I love playing with words. So, you know, you get into a groove. I think the hardest part is letting it go. You could edit it till the day is long. In fact, I had a woman in the States that was helping me put the interior together with like margins and bleeds and all that nasty stuff that I don't want to deal with. And she was helping me do a few last minute edits, and I wouldn't stop. And she's like, Melissa, it's done. Like you could edit this until you're 98 and you still won't be happy with it. And every first time author goes through that, but you have to let it go. And it's very hard to do that. So I think anyone doing this, like you have to be prepared to know when the cutoff is. And then when you put it out, you're like, you know, all your friends and family go nuts at first and everyone's buying it. And then there's like silence and you think, oh my God, they hate it. And then it's not, and then the first person will come, but like, everyone starts surfacing going, oh my God, I love it. It's amazing. Blah, blah, blah. And then you're like, okay, I can breathe. But for the first 3 weeks, I wanted to throw up like every day. I'm thinking, what have I done? What have I said? What have I revealed? Cause it's pretty honest, this story. So yeah, those are the things that I learned. Okay. I don't know if it's helpful, but that's my experience.
No, it is helpful. And finally, what do you think all this travel and all the places you've been, how has it changed you as a person? And what have you learned about yourself and about people and the world? I mean, what has all this taught you?
Yeah. I think there's so much, like sometimes, you know, as I get older, sometimes when I hate packing. I hate it. And every time I have to pack for a trip, I'm like, why am I doing this? Like, why can't I be normal? And why can't I just stay home and like watch TV? So, and then when I get there, I'm like, okay, it's worth it. And I think there's a few things. One is I think we do it. I think people who travel do it because you like the way you feel. Like there's something about, you feel different than you feel at home. You feel like maybe things that would bother you in your own city don't bother you when you're away, or you feel more free, or you feel, I don't know what it is, but for me, I like that person who I am when I'm away. I think the other thing is that you meet people that you would never probably hang out with in your regular life. You hang out with people of all walks of life because you have this common love of travel. And sometimes those people get you more than the people in your regular life. So I love that. I love just meeting people, and you don't have to explain things like this, or you can talk about travel like you were saying earlier about not doing it with stand-up. You can have these conversations with travelers that you cannot have with other people. So I think that's beautiful. And like those connections and those bonds when you're having adventures that you're never going to have with people at home are amazing. And then I think the other thing is like, you realize how small you are when you're in the mountains, or, you know, in the jungle, or, you know, like the world is certainly a beautiful, beautiful place. And, it just reminds you, you know, that like you're kind of insignificant in many ways.
Right.
And I think that's important.
It humbles you.
Yeah. And I think the last thing I'll say about that is, I think that this is the message we all need right now, is that no matter where you go, we all need the same things. So I think that's what traveling does for people. We see people of different socioeconomic backgrounds, and often lower socioeconomic backgrounds are much happier than we are. And I think we all need to see that. We can learn so much from them. And people who have sometimes nothing are the most generous, kind, and the happiest people on the planet. So those are my takeaways for traveling.
That's great. Melissa, I couldn't say it any better myself. So thank you so much for doing this. Melissa Rodway, the book is called again. Give us the name of the book.
The People You Meet. And I'm going to also give you the subtitle because, come on, why wouldn't I do that?
It's, go ahead.
Luxury Leeches, Love and Lau Lau with a host of interesting characters in Southeast Asia.
Great. And remind me again what Lau Lau is. Or is that in the, do I have Lau to read the Lau. Book?
Well, it's a drink. It'll knock you on your ass, but it's
I was familiar when I saw it. I was like, I know that's something that I should know. And because I'm sure I drank it. Whatever it is, I'm sure I drank it at some point.
Yeah, you would have.
Thank you for reaching out. It was great to meet you.
Thanks for having me. I also appreciate it.
Melissa Rodway, everybody.
For spontaneous travelers, Winging It is the perfect listen. James Hammond shares stories and tips from 75-plus countries. Find it at voyescape.com.